Michael Avery with Classic Business.
Well, welcome back. Local markets were closed today, so we dive right into our special Election Day panel. And before I introduce my panelists, I'd just like to play this brief clip from the President earlier today.
And the outcome of this election will be a major boost to also investors who will want to look at South Africa differently and not only invest their money here, but also invest their confidence. So this vote is about confidence. It's about the future, and it is about us who are going to be elected to work a lot harder, much harder than we have in the past, to realize the ideals, the wishes, and the hopes of our people.
Investing confidence is exactly what needs to happen in the South African economy as we await the election results, as we heard from Annika Lass, and that'll only start revealing itself tomorrow. We just heard from the President, there's a promise to build investor confidence, and he also invoked Madiba earlier today in saying never, never and never again will we see the sort of state capture that was the hallmark of the previous administration. But beyond tackling corruption, what do we think the President should do, and promptly, if the ANC comes out on top, to rebuild confidence in the country we'd all like to see rise from the ashes of the last decade of wanton looting and certainly the abrogation of the dream of Nelson Mandela? So we've assembled a formidable panel for you tonight to run through that, starting with Anne Bernstein, who is a Reagan Fascal Fellow, a National Endowment for Democracy in Washington, D.C. in the mid-2000s, a board member of the Brenthurst Foundation, and also Executive Director for the Center for Development and Enterprise, amongst other posts. Held evening, Anne.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And like so many, I think, hopeful. Well, let's introduce our second panelist tonight, Pielo Tselapedi, who's a lecturer in the Department of Political and International Studies at Rhodes University. He's also worked for an umbrella body of a number of NGOs called Local Government Network, delivering constitutional literacy workshops on local government. Thanks for joining us, Pielo.
Thank you, Michael, and hi to your listeners.
On the line, we've also got, on hopefully a decent Skype line, Robert Matties, Professor of Politics at Strathclyde University in Glasgow. Originally from the US, he's spent the past 25 years researching and teaching in South Africa before moving to Strathclyde in 2016, where he was a visiting research scholar at the Princeton Institute for International and Regional Studies. He's an honorary professor of political studies and a former director of the Democracy in Africa Research Unit that's based in the Center for Social Science Research at the University of Cape Town. He's also a co-founder of Afrobarometer. A real pleasure to host you, Professor Matties.
Good afternoon from Rhodes, Scotland.
We were supposed to have Richard Calland, who unfortunately had to send his apologies at the 11th hour. So I'll move on to my next guest, who's in our FMR studios, the man who played a prominent role for convening the State Capacity Research Project. That was on the dynamics of state capture in South Africa. That culminated in the report Betrayal of the Promise, How South Africa is Being Stolen. He's been actively involved in studying, researching and understanding systems in transition for almost his entire academic life. Professor Mark Swilling, the Center for Complex Systems in Transition at Stellenbosch University's co-director. Professor Swilling, as always, great to share your insights. Thanks for making the time.
Thanks, Michael. Evening.
In studio, I've got Ian Cruickshanks, the chief economist at the distinguished think tank, which recently celebrated its 90th birthday, I believe, Ian, the Institute of Race Relations. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And to round off the panel tonight, Professor Raphael De Kut from the Helen Suzman Foundation and St. Augustine College of South Africa. Always a great pleasure, Raphael, to see you and to share your insights too.
It's good to be here. Thank you.
Now let's dive straight in, and I believe you are short of time, so we'll start with you, and we'll come to the CDE's Agenda 2019 brief shortly. My general observation from speaking to people where I voted this morning and a few others to get some comments from Yeovil to Inanda, certainly a sort of suburban view, was that we seem to be focusing far more now on bread and butter issues, the economy, on jobs, and perhaps not the old racial lines that are very clearly defined past polls.
Well, look, Michael, I think you have to start with the fact that South Africa is in deep, deep trouble. We have multiple crises. We sit with a fiscal crisis, with an economy that is pretty much, you know, won't get above 1% if we're lucky, but there's no prospect of real growth. The population's growing faster than the economy's growing. We have an unemployment crisis that just keeps growing. It's unprecedented globally, really, for young people, and it's one of the worst for young and old. And you could go on and on and on. So the country is in deep trouble. We sit with, I think, a very difficult situation. We have what a very senior state official has said, you know, a state that is in many respects is failing. Has, you know, it's uneven, but it's hard to see where there are competent parts. There are a few pockets, but not many. So I think this affects voters, that voters know that there are fewer jobs because people are being retrenched, and this obviously affects race relations. It's hard to see how our democracy and the kind of all the things we hope for this country that are embodied in our constitution, how these things can continue if we don't have growth and if we don't have labor-intensive growth. And we have to make significant progress in that so that people start to have hope again.
Hope is a vital currency with which to trade in during these dark times. Tapelo, there is a choice, and chatting once again to voters, they seem to want change, but they don't seem to embrace that change through voting for alternatives. Many that I spoke to, many young voters in Yeovil, for example, were still going to vote for the ruling party after all the stories of corruption, the institutionalized nature of it, be it all the way back to Travelgate, to Nkandla, the arms deal, you take your pick. Is this a necessary force to impact to give the president a mandate? Do you think that such a thing exists?
Look, I think the election euphoria today, what we're seeing today, is that a lot of people tend to then forget all of the corruption scandals that you've just mentioned there. So today, seemingly, a lot of people are just remembering sort of the struggle aspect around what the ANC did, how they attained the freedom, and that Cyril Ramaphosa was part of the people who had been part of the constitutional architecture of the state. So to that extent, I think, you know, that euphoria has sort of dampened people to understand some of the contemporary issues that was just articulated now. But also the second issue around, particularly with the youth component, is that a lot of the youth are not able to make the connection between seriously putting an X on the ballot box and then connecting it to issues around water, electricity, the economy, jobs, making sure that in the different sectors there's employment, and that, you know, entrepreneurs are paid as well by the state. So those connections are not so clear. And a lot of the people are thinking, perhaps this is my first vote. You've just turned 21 or 22, and you want to be able to make that vote count. And perhaps also, given your relations with the family and there's a history behind the ANC, it's better to put your vote to the ANC. But I think there's a need to make clear connections between what has been happening for the past 10 years, has there been accountability, and then how do you then position yourself as a voter in connection with all of those issues? In fact, I saw one Facebook post saying that, let's remember Marikana. So I think those things are not quite clear, or they're not made connections when it comes to today when people are voting today.
And Tapelo, thanks for that. You also have to go at 6 o'clock. So to the rest of the panelists, I will bring you in after six. And I'd just like you to listen into the initial comments from Anne and Tapelo. I'm not forgetting about you. Anne, in a series of briefs at the CDE, you produced the so-called Agenda 2019. And it is all about encouraging voters to go beyond the slogans, to actually have some kind of institutional memory here, to ask the hard questions. And I think one of the key sticking points for you, and certainly for the market, is the fact that we have seen, particularly within the ANC and its alliance partners, this desire to cast business as the enemy in South Africa for so long, partly to the Marxist lens through which the economy is viewed, and partly due to what I believe to be a somewhat spurious link 25 years into the democratic era of business benefiting from apartheid still. What impact will having a businessman in Cyril Ramaphosa as president have on this attitude towards business?
Well, I think the president has certainly started to move the conversation in certainly Davos and Sandton, and now increasingly in the rest of the country, and a bit less enthusiastically, but he has started to move the conversation to talking about the important role of business, and that people should stop talking about white monopoly capital and see entrepreneurs as heroes. Now, how popular that is in the ANC and can he carry that through into policy is very important. We haven't seen it in the last year or so. So if you pierce through all the rhetoric and the chatter, South Africa's economy is in a worse situation today than we were a year ago. And in many respects, and business confidence is down. So it's going to be absolutely vital that a whole new attitude to growth takes place in the new government. They have to prioritize labor-intensive and much faster growth, and they have to follow that through into policy. So growth needs to trump other policies, and that has enormous consequences for how we think about property rights to the labor market. And unless we do that, we are not going to get the kind of investment that we need. And all of that requires a very different attitude to business as an activity, not crony capitalism. We're not saying that we want that. But you can't be pro-growth and anti-business. It's not going to work. And so we're saying to be sort of pro-business, if you like, is not any particular company. It's not crony capitalism. We've seen the enormous negative consequences of that for everybody. But it's understanding that we want a much more competitive entrepreneurial economy, and one that opens up opportunities to work and to be entrepreneurs for millions of more people.
There are signs, Anne, if South Africa is to prosper, I agree with you. We need to see growth above all. I mean, that really is the long and the short of it. The political trade-offs are clear. It's very difficult to form broad coalitions with alliance partners if you're going to be, in the view of Labour, weakening Labour rights that have been perhaps strengthened too far over the last 25 years. But I want to focus on one of the initiatives, one of the concretes that we've seen over the last 12 months, the Public-Private Growth Initiative under the auspices of Rolf Meyer and Johan van Sail and Nkosi Sana Dlamini Zuma in the presidency, seems to be a coalition around how we unblock bottlenecks and constraints from a policy perspective and other skills issues to growth. Is that the sort of broad coalition that we need to see more of if we're to see the private sector buying into a pro-growth reform from the president?
Look, we want less of big business and big government and big trade unions making deals that suit themselves. We've got to bring in the 50% of the South African population who live in poverty and nearly 10 million people who are unemployed. Now, this initiative has promised, but at the moment, we don't know all that much about it. There's some tough issues. I'm with the governor of the Reserve Bank keeps saying the country needs a new narrative of why we are in such a terrible situation, and that, in my view, will lay the foundation for the hard trade-offs we're going to have to make as a society. And whether that can come out of this growth initiative, I don't know. I think it's early days still. We know what's holding back a lot of sectors of the economy, but will big business be bold enough to say these things have to be done? Because up until now, they've played a satisfying role in done deals often, like the national minimum wage and others, that are not in the interests of everybody in the country.
Tapelo, as we reach the end of our time together here, and really now the attention will be turning to what happens if the ANC were to gain a victory to put Cyril Ramaphosa back into the presidency, what does he need to focus on now in order to deliver on that promise from the clip earlier to build confidence in the South African self-help turnaround story?
Look, I think, you know, the trajectory is correct around the issue of state institutions, prosecutorial agencies, and the sort of the different commissions that have been investigating the maladministration, corruption, and the networks that have undermined institutions to do the job that they're supposed to be doing. So I think to that extent, it's important that he carries on with that work. But also similarly, the NPA has received a new lease on life, so they should also be able to act on those instances where people are found to have acted not in accordance with the Constitution. And I think that's the bigger part. A lot of the problems has been that, you know, we hear corruption here, we hear corruption there, but there has not been any follow-up. People are either investigated and the investigation is foiled. So I think that there's an importance with that. But I think the bigger issue for the president is going to be on the ANC. In as much as he's able to restructure the state, make sure that there aren't a lot of cabinet ministers, make sure that they're competent DGs and directors at the political level in the different ministries, I think the bigger problem will be with the ANC. Will he be able to rein in on those elements that, one, are undermining his authority, and two, that have such influence over government that they impede the projects of transformation, projects of basic service delivery? I mean, we can go, you know, to the different municipalities and the provinces where we see a lot of the problems that I think bedevil the ANC. So I think for me, that would be the biggest issue, whether he can be able to deliver on that. But as with regards to the state, I think the trajectory is quite correctly. But the issue is, can the other institutions that he's able to sort of stabilize, can they do the work that they're supposed to be doing? And I think that will go a long way in making sure that he leaves a long-lasting legacy.
Tapelo Tselopedi, lecturer in the Department of Political and International Studies at Rhodes University, thank you so much. And Anne Bernstein, Executive Director from the Centre for Development and Enterprise. They leave us now. We just have to cross to Kotlea Makhasi for the news. And when we return, we'll pick up with the remainder of our panellists.